On today's episode of Steps, I talk with Colin Jonov, former Bucknell and Pitt football player, current founder and CEO of Athletic Fortitude. Hope you enjoy the conversation, and let's get into it.
And we are live. We are in the flesh. Well, not in the flesh, but thanks to Riverside, we're chatting it up. And I got to ask, how are you doing, man? Because I know some stuff had happened, and you're just actually coming off surgery. So I want to check in, see how you're doing, man.
Yeah, no, you know, I'm doing well. I think you're getting me in a pretty raw state, which hopefully will make for a good interview. I'm used to being on the other side of the mic, but, you know, just coming off my fourth surgery in the last year on my knee, minor procedure, but nonetheless, still another time going under the knife. But there's always unknown uncertainties, but, you know, I'm doing really well. Surgery was a success. So I'm just taking it one day at a time, getting back to, you know, hopefully where I was before, if not better.
See, and you said what I kind of think is funny. I'm catching you on the opposite side, right? You're used to asking the questions and steering conversation and all of that stuff. And for those that don't know, right, now's probably a cool opportunity for you to kind of talk a little bit about like what you do in that space and kind of lay the groundwork, because we're going to go all over the place. I have a feeling this is going to be a pretty cool conversation. But since you brought it up, I'd love for you to share kind of what you meant by that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, you know, what I do, and honestly, kind of how Steve and I got connected. So I have a company called Athletic Fortitude. I run my own podcast called The Athletic Fortitude Show. But it's all, you know, mindset with athletics, all the holistic picture, being a mentally, physically, and emotionally healthy athlete. So, you know, as I run my business, I'm going through my own trials and tribulations. And it's a really good opportunity to practice what I preach with athletes. I think that is a unique factor I'm able to add is, you know, even though I'm not playing anymore, I still go through all the same things. The injuries continue to linger. You know, that's a big part of my story. You know, I was injured a lot, you know, not minor injuries, big injuries, surgeries, you know, fractured back, fractured hip, fractured shoulder. I mean, 8 out of 10 years from 13 to 23, I had sustained some type of serious injury that put me on multiple weeks. And it's followed me in my post career. Like I said, I've had 4 knee surgeries in the last year stemming from an old football injury. So it's just, you know, it's one of those things you learn to, I hate the word cope. I don't think that's a great word to use, but you learn how to deal with the emotions and you learn how to channel them and direct them in a positive manner.
Instead of cope, what word would you prefer?
Yeah, I think I just hit on it, right? It's channeling that energy properly. So it's like I'm coping. It's just learning how to take, whether it's negative emotions of frustration, anger, sadness, and direct them into ways that are helpful. And I think there's a number of different ways you can do that. It's a little bit different for everybody. But it really comes down to the internal dialogue you have in your head with it.
Yeah. And again, cope has typically kind of a negative connotation. And the interesting thing I've been reflecting as I'm bringing, you know, steps back, and I shared it in a previous episode that I recorded. You know, it's a quote from my brother that like everything that's already happened has been written in pen, right? We can't change any of it, right? So it's part of our story. And as I've continued to kind of reflect, right, like I think that's kind of the evolution that I brought forth with like this new season of steps, that it's like, it's literally the steps and the journey that's brought you to here. And it's understanding kind of where those steps have taken you and what it means to you right now, so that way you can go forward. So like, I don't love that you're going through your fourth surgery in a year and all that stuff. And the really cool thing is like, that's a part of your story. And then it kind of transfers into what you're trying to create and what your vision and in your business and in your podcast and all that.
Yeah. I think one thing, and I had it in my post the other day, it's, I cannot ask to be courageous and then live an easy life, for one is the price of the other. You know, for me, it's anytime one of these hardships come, you know, usually through injury, for me, it's another opportunity to prove that I can be courageous, or I can be resilient. I can be tenacious still. And, you know, it's just another opportunity for me to continue to prove it myself and my own beliefs that I can overcome kind of whatever's thrown my way. So obviously you always get that why me first, you know, and you shouldn't judge yourself for that. That's a normal reaction, but then it's get out of that space as quickly as possible. Learn to flip that switch and channel it into proper energy.
How do you do that? Because again, like I think that I don't, whether you're a former athlete, whether you're a coach, whether you're a parent, like a human, right? Like these are things that's like the why me, or the like the introspective, like those reflective moments where you're like, where you're sitting in your stuff, right? Like, and it's okay to do that at times, but like obviously you've had those moments. How do you snap out of it? What's your snap out triggers, or what do you do for that?
So I think it's been different throughout the course of my life. I think right now it's different than it was 4 years ago, just because I've gotten better at it. So where I'm at right now is, anytime I'm in that why me space, it's okay, let's live in this space. It's going to be a short period of time, but let's feel what this feels like to feel like a victim, right? And most of the time, it feels terrible. So I'm like, okay, this isn't working. This feels terrible. Let's go. Let's change the mindset. Let's have the communication inside my head. Hey, you've overcome this before. You're built for this. You can move on. And so that's kind of where I'm at now. It's like purely like deep breath, talk to myself, and I'm good. Where it was before was, you had to start asking yourself questions about the emotions you're feeling and learn the why. Why am I upset that I'm hurt? Why am I frustrated? You know, why is XYZ happening? So once you start to learn to ask yourself the proper questions, then you can start implementing certain things, right? So whether it's, hey, be with your feet, or whether it's, hey, you know, gratitude journal, whether it's, hey, just regular journal and whatever, writing down your negative thoughts. There's a number of different practices that you can use, and I've tried them all. At the end of the day, what really helps me, or where I've gotten to the point where I don't necessarily need to journal my thoughts anymore, because I can have that communication inside my own mind, where I think journaling and breathing helps you get to that point. Now I can just have that conversation with myself and just move.
Man, and that's because I think that everybody at different points in time sits and tries to figure out these different ways, right? Like, what is it? And again, I'm the same as you. Gratitude journal. Let's meditate. Let's do this. Let's read the Bible. Breathing. And okay, let's do a double breath, long exhale. Like, there's all of these things. And I don't think that any of them are wrong. I think that it's kind of a process, right? It's the steps to get you to where you're at, to understand, okay, what do I need right now? And maybe you got to go back and lean into some of the old stuff, just because, you know, maybe you're so spun up, or you can't move past something that you can go and rely on it. But like, I love the fact that you're sitting and you're having that conversation in your head and able to move it forward. Now, here's something, like, because I saw a post, you were out at RMU, right? Mm-hmm. Robert Morris. Yep. So you spoke out there, and I'm really curious, and I like, on my notes, you had a couple cool things as you elaborated on that post, but like, there were a couple around like fear, like about other people's opinions. So I'll kind of go through these, and then you can kind of go wherever you want with it. Like, fear other people's opinions. In 60 years, we're all basically going to be dead. And then the alter ego, right? So those were three, like, out of that post that I took. And I love it, because anybody that knows me, right, coming from the coaching background, and like, sometimes that's tough to be able to get up in front of a bunch of athletes, right? When you're were their peers, you're not, and all that stuff, but like, also to command and bring up points like that. So I'm curious, how did that come about? And then kind of those points around there, what made you draw to those conclusions following that?
Yeah. So fear, I think, is an interesting topic to discuss. Everybody faces fear, and you can label that fear. It's nervousness, anxiety, stress, you know, however you want to label it. At the end of the day, we all have some type of fear. And I always challenge people who say, oh, that athlete or that person, they're fearless. It's like, no, it's not that they're fearless. It's that they're able to learn through their fear and push through it anyway. It's like, you can live with fear and perform with fear. You can perform with anxiety. It's just harnessing your relationship with it and rationalizing it. So you have to understand it. So for me, my fear of public speaking, you know, after trial and error, really dissecting myself, asking the right questions, came down to, I don't want to sound stupid in front of a bunch of people and have them judge me. Yeah. Point blank, that's what it is. So I work through that with, hey, in 60 years, I'm going to be dead. They're going to be dead. Nobody's going to remember anything I said. Right. And the reality is, most of what I said, it's been a few days. Those guys probably forgot. You know, There's probably a lot of things that I said, good and bad, that they forgot already. So for me, it's, hey, why am I feeling fearful? Okay, I know why. How can I overcome that? Mm-hmm. By rationalizing what that fear is, rationalizing, okay, this is going to pass, good or bad. And then three, it's that, you know, creating that alter ego. And that's one of my favorite things where I've been super successful, is I can be kind of introverted. Now, you put me in the right room, I'll talk. I'll never shut up. But in general, I'm like relatively introverted. So for me, I have to create that alter ego that exists in comfortable spaces, and bring that alter ego out to help me handle that fear or handle things that I'm uncomfortable with. And I first honestly learned this process. You saw a couple athletes. I mean, Deion Sanders, prime time. Beyonce Knowles, I think hers is Sasha Fierce. They have these alter egos that help them encapsulate that part of their personality when it's time to perform, where their normal walking around everyday self may not want to handle that pressure or have to handle those conversations, but they summon that person when it's necessary. And so for me, that's what I've really learned to do. You know, when I'm podcasting, when I'm public speaking, you know, when I'm talking to whoever, and when it's a serious manner, being able to kind of just take that deep breath through my belly, breathe it out, and then boom, now it's my more confident self that comes out, that can handle this, that can command a room, that can stick his chest out and shoulders back and be like, okay, I'm here. This is what I'm here to say. This is what I'm here to do.
There's a lot there, right? Like, and before we go any further, do you have a name for your alter ego?
So I'm kind of working through it. So I'm a big believer in like training your willpower. So I like Will Powers as a name. So I'm testing that. I've used that for a while. I don't know if I'll keep it or not, though, as I progress.
Well, it can evolve. Your identity will evolve, right? Like, and how you want to show up. I've talked to a couple people about this, and I've heard a lot of studies around it. Like, again, talking to that internal voice that you have, or naming that, like, that negative voice, right? Like, you know, and telling it to go away. Like, for a while, I think I named mine Scott, right? Like, Scott, get out of here, right? Like, and again, like being able to associate it with like an identity, right? Because again, that's all we end up doing as we sit and we're scrolling on social media, we're doing all this stuff, right? Like, we're identifying with these people and we're creating, they're putting these identities out there and we're kind of receiving all this, but like internally, we got to understand how we want to show up and what we're showing up as. So like Will Powers, I dig that. That's pretty cool.
So one thing I like to say about identity, because that's, you know, my big kick is, you know, your identity is never static. It's either dynamic or fluid. If it's dynamic, you're choosing. If it's fluid, you're allowing other people to choose your identity for you. So you want to live in that dynamic space with identity where you're constantly, you know, sure of who you are because you're building who you want to be. And sometimes that changes, particularly over time. It's going to have a different look. It's going to have a different feel. But as long as you're in control of it, and you're at least influencing your own behavior and thoughts and actions, then you're in control of your identity.
When did you realize that? Or when did you start developing that? Because again, you started talking injuries from 13 on and all these different things, right? Being an athlete was part of your identity. But like, when did you start associating what you just said to your everyday life?
Yeah, so I'm trying to think of this time frame here. So I started my company about 20 months ago now. Okay. So I've been doing identity work now for about that time. Obviously it changes and gets better. What I just talked about, you know, dynamic versus fluid identity, I'd say probably within the last like 9 months have I really adopted that and begun to put that in my coaching and my own life.
Where did you learn about that? Or where did you kind of come build that as like foundational pieces for your business and yourself?
Yeah. So to be honest, the dynamic and fluid identity, I think it's a combination of different books I've read, but ultimately it's the way I interpreted things and kind of created it myself, in a sense, because why I say it's fluid. If you're allowing other people to choose it for you, is you are not acting intentionally. You are not living on purpose. Your actions are random. And that's how, like, ultimately your identity is judged by what you do. Some by what you say, but 95% by what you do. So every action I take is, in a sense, determining what my identity is. So if I have a dynamic approach to that, I am purposely changing over time. Where fluid, if my actions are random, then the world is dictating who I am because I don't have control of my own actions, if that makes sense. And I just kind of labeled it from different things that I've read.
Yeah, no, it does make sense. And again, I think that in a world that we're all talking about our brand, our core values, all of these different things, right? Like, I think the interesting thing is those constantly evolve. But whenever you understand what it is that makes you you, it makes the kind of dynamic identity piece that much easier, because you understand, like, you can come back to, like, you know, if it's faith, if it's health and wellness, whatever your core tenets are. And as you're trying to figure this out, like, does this align? Cool. Yes, I can kind of keep going down that path. Or no, it doesn't. Like, this is total, and it allows you to kind of almost system of checks and balances, you know?
It's a house analogy, and I've heard this from a couple of different people that I absolutely love. And just as if you do renovations on a house, you do it on yourself. Your core values, beliefs usually don't really change, right? You know, the type of person you want to be in terms of character, right? The type of relationships that you hold yourself to, whether that's brother, sister, son, you know, mother, son, father. You're the parent, right? You kind of have those core tenant values, and that's like the root of your house, right? That's like the structure of your house. And then as you begin to build each room, you begin to build different sectors of your identity. But it's building that foundation is the most important part, where those ones don't really change, but it's the renovations on top where you start to begin to change the other elements of your identity.
I dig that. Like again, core values, like those are foundational, right? That's exactly what it is, right? And again, even just from a personal assessment perspective, trying to understand again how I want to show up and what I feel the call on my life is, and all of these things, right? Like ultimately, it comes back to these certain things that are deep seated in me, and that kind of came from childhood, right? Like from early on, and then yes, they're going to evolve, but they're still foundational. Did you like, is that the case for you? Like, did that, you feel that you got all of those or the good baseline of that from childhood, from youth, right? Because again, I mean, yeah, you're pretty much in the same area where you grew up, yeah?
Yep, I'm actually like 2 miles down
No
the
way.
street from where I grew up. Yeah, probably a little more, probably like 3, 4 miles. But yeah, I'm in the same hometown, same school district. But yeah, in terms of kind of where I got my foundational values, 100%, you know, some of it, you know, nature versus nurture. You know, the way I was raised, 100% plays into the core values that I have. And you know, meeting my wife at such a young age. You know, we met when, you know, actually on my 16th birthday. So I've been with her for 12 years now. I've been married for 4. You know, and through her, I really developed a strong faith. And so that's really where a lot of my core values came. But to be honest, it changes too. So like my, I would say I added to my core values when my career ended, because I learned how to kind of construct who I wanted to be in a certain lens and be able to add that to my core values.
There's a lot there, right? Like, so you talked wife, you talk, I mean, met on your 16th birthday. And I want to come back to that, but let's go where you've just finished around like kind of that career ending thing. And we'll do that and kind of flashback because again, you had a pretty storied career by, I mean, let's be honest, by anybody's measure, especially somebody who's never done it at the highest level that you've done, right? I mean, you've played all the way through. You've gone from youth to high school to college, you know, and then grad and then NFL for 3 days, according to your Instagram profile. And I love that. But like, what can you share about that journey, right? Whatever kind of really stands out to you, anywhere from youth all the way on through, because again, there's a lot there, but if it's not, I want to make sure that it's stuff that you're sharing that's important to you and that it's been that's foundational kind of moments for you.
Yeah, so you know, a tough question. I think, you know, for myself, right, kind of what I learned along the way is, and I'm not even sure if this is healthy, but I'm so unsatisfied with the way my career played out because I held myself to a higher standard. In that same breath, if you asked most people, kind of like you just said, they would have said I either outperformed or lived up to the expectations and more, but they weren't the expectations I set for myself. So I have to live with that every day, knowing I didn't achieve my own dreams. In that same breath, and this is the more important part, I can reflect back and be grateful for every opportunity I got to experience along the way, because there's people who would kill to have had opportunities that I had. And so I am incredibly grateful. And I proved everything I needed to prove to myself. But when it comes to that kind of unwritten piece where I wanted to be an NFL player for 10 years, I didn't live up to my own expectations. So that's hard to swallow and accept. But I will say it has been a blessing in disguise, you know, when my career ended. Because I don't think I would have all the amazing things in my life that I have now.
Well, you talked about your wife and faith and all that stuff, right? And again, a lot of people believe, right, that again, everything does happen for a reason, whether you believe in a higher power or you believe in God or anything like that. And all that's led you, kind of like you're talking the steps of the journey, led you to right here. I want to ask a question around, you said the expectations and you felt like you fell short. And I read there was a quote that you were quoted in a newspaper article. I was like, if this is the last, and I'm going to butcher it, but like, if this is the last time that I get the opportunity to do this, I'm grateful for all of it. And hey, I even got to perform in front of the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, scout or, you know, whatever it might be. But I heard you say that, right, you feel as though you felt short. So mm-hmm. like that quote and then what you just told me are kind of opposite ends of the spectrum. So if you can put yourself back in those shoes, did you feel what you shared with me now when you said that?
Yeah, absolutely. So to kind of bring the parallel to those, right?
Yeah, go.
And kind of where I wrapped, like I'm incredibly grateful for everything I got to experience. I know I pretty much did everything that I absolutely could. And that's why I can leave the game with my head held high. Mm-hmm. Internally, I struggle because I know, at least I feel, I could have achieved more. Now, how would I have achieved more? I don't really know. But that being said, like incredibly, like I have zero shame. I'm incredibly proud of the things that I've done. It's just internally, there's a different struggle because I always wanted to achieve more. And like I said, I don't know if that's always healthy or not, but it's even now today, I still want to achieve more. Doesn't mean I'm not grateful. Doesn't mean, you know, I don't have internal battles. But I kind of always want to achieve more.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, right? Because again, with the constant, probably wrong, or achievement chasing or things like that, right? Like if there's always something more, right? Like then there always seems like there's a lack of satisfaction, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for
sure. How do you balance that?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I think you talk to a lot of different athletes or, you know, entrepreneurs or just anyone who's wired to kind of compete. It's always that balancing act. I have a firm belief if you're not growing or chasing something else, you can't really find full happiness or joy or fulfillment. So I'm always living in the present and proud and, you know, grateful, right? For my family, for my daughters, my wife, my dog, you know, my family. I can always be grateful and grounded in the things that I do have, that where I can have that rooted in joy and fulfillment. But I also think it's human nature to always want to be pushing and chasing for more, not even necessarily in a dollar sense, but just pushing yourself into new realms, pushing yourself out of your comfort zone, trying to really just push the threshold for what you think you're capable of. And that's where that piece kind of comes in, is having both, being able to, you know, be where your feet are, be in the present moment and enjoy everything that you have. But in that same breath, being able to turn it up a notch and look for something more. Hmm.
So, and I love that. And I'm going to bring it back around to call it like the almost the end of it for you. And then how you've moved forward. Because again, as I said, high school athlete, three sport athlete, and then you go to Bucknell and you're there for, was it 4 years?
4 years at Bucknell.
Four years and then injury and then transfer to Pitt, grad student, and then you get the opportunity to go with the Bills, right? So I guess where I want to place us is Bills, kind of the mini camp, you know, where you were there, and then kind of that moment to where it's like when that ended, to then understand where you were at about where your eyes were for the future.
Yeah. So Buffalo Bills camp ends. I get essentially not signed to a contract. The really cool part for me, and why I love that organization so much, Sean McDermott pulled me to the side and just had a full-on conversation with me. You know, explained to me, and he didn't have to do that, right?
Like, no,
didn't have to do that. But just took the time to talk to me, get to know me a little bit, you know, tell me what I did really well, you know, told me things I could improve on, encouraged me to continue playing, which, you know, hindsight was awesome. I think I was burnt out at that point after I got cut, because it was just, you know, through all the injuries I had, through, you know, all the trials and tribulations, I got to that point, you know, getting cut, you know, pretty early in camp. I kind of knew that that was it for me. And so, you know, him encouraging me to play, like, felt really good. Gave me kind of that, you know, the satisfaction that I needed at that time. Ultimately, I did try and make a comeback to play football again. COVID hit. So it was back in the time they were doing those hub workouts. And I was going out of workout for the New York Guardians XFL team. It went well enough to where we were saying, like, okay, let's try and get, see if we can get into an NFL camp. So I was going to go to one of those hub workouts the day before my flight, pull my hamstring. So for me, and my daughter was going to be born in like 3 weeks.
Oh, man.
And so for me, I was just like, you know, I've put my best foot forward. I've proved everything I can to myself. I can comfortably hang my hat up, even though it's short of my expectations. I know I gave it a good run. It was after that point, we're really in between my comeback. So when I got cut in between my comeback, it was like where athletic fortitude kind of began. Because the what I frequently say to people, and it's the only way I know how to articulate it, is when I got cut, it was like a piece of me died that day, you know, putting everything into athletics, particularly football. That's all I ever knew myself was. When I got cut, it just crushed me. And it got to a point where, you know, I really didn't like who I was looking at in the mirror. I wasn't taking care of myself, wasn't working out, wasn't eating right. Was really reject or dejected from, you know, family members and whatnot. And it was, I knew I needed to make a change. And so that's where kind of like my self-discovery process really began. When I began to become more introspective, when I was able to look back at previous experiences and understand why I felt certain ways compared to why I felt the way I did now. And I was able to kind of begin the idea of that. And when I came back, trying to come back and play again, I was significantly better than I ever was when I actually played. I could run faster, jump higher, lift more. I was more in shape. My mindset was right. And I dedicate all of that to my mindset, being able to understand and really just have conviction and belief in what I was doing. And it really, it reflected in my training, which was really cool. I was able to set some crazy, you know, jumping records for myself that I never thought I'd hit. Same with speed test, strength test. Just got stronger, faster, jump higher, more athletic. It's crazy how much your mind actually plays into it. And that was like the only part is I wish I could have showed that more, so it was more believable than just my words. But that's why I say like I have full conviction in myself because I saw what I did for myself, and so I can rest a little bit more peacefully at night with it.
Give me time frame, because you said like COVID hubs, so like give
So I
me.
was cut in 2019, so 20, May of 2019, cut from Buffalo. Probably 6 month span there, was pretty down, right? So probably through November of that year of 2019, I start getting back into shape, January of 20.
And that's
COVID
COVID.
hits March. So then flash forward to the following November, COVID starts to slow down relatively. The XFL had just shut down, but they announced that the XFL was coming back in some capacity, which ended up being the UFL. So that January, so January now of 22,
Two. Okay.
22 or 21, I forget. Might have been 21.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's right. No. 22, January of 22.
Okay.
Yep, January 22. That's it, I think. I start really. Hold on, what year was it? No, I think it was January 21. Yeah,
When you
January of
say
20.
your daughter, put it in reference with your daughter, when your
Daughter,
daughter was
yeah.
born.
Yeah, so January of 21 is when I start making my comeback. And I pop. So I get, we'll have that workout for the XFL. Or former XFL coach goes well enough. I'm getting prepared for the hub. So it's July 2021. I'm like peak form, like fully confident I'm gonna make a team. Pull my hamstring, and
And
then
that's
right before camp, right? Like NFL camp. So there were no more hub workouts. It was the NFL camp coming after my daughter was gonna be born, you know, 3 weeks later. So for me, that's just kind of where I was like, okay. I was like, I proved it to myself. You know, from that period where I got cut, that 2 year period, essentially, I became twice the athlete I ever was. And so that's all I kind of needed.
Well, and what I was trying to kind of understand time frame, right? Because this was, and you talked about COVID, and you talked about, again, depression, isolation, pulling yourself away. And right, obviously that happened a lot during COVID. We were up in Portland, Oregon, and you know, Portland was kind of on lockdown for the better part of almost 2 years, and more right. like restrictive. And so like that's when I was working for Adidas, and we weren't in office for the better part of 2 years. And so like I understand that isolation piece, that depression piece. I've talked about it on different podcasts, right? Therapy, I know, saved me, because again, conversations with me and my wife, like, it's like, no, you need to talk to somebody, because again, I'm a social person, and the role and function that I was in, like I was out, you know, every 2 to 4 weeks at events and like talking to people and shaking hands and doing all the stuff from my college coaching days that like lit me up and just truly connecting. But then you go into these moments of isolation, and I think that's going to be something that's very pivotal for so many people, that time during COVID. And I'm curious, because, and that's where I want to understand your time frame. You said it happened before. Mm-hmm. Did you have any of that, like that feeling of isolation or loneliness during COVID, or even like kind of, is that still something for you?
Yeah, I think for a while now, not even like, you know, pre-COVID, post-COVID, I always kind of feel isolated. And the reason I feel isolated is, well, I call myself an intellectual, not that I'm smarter than anyone, but it's, I'm super analytical of every single emotion and thought that I feel. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I just think a thought and it goes away. It's like, oh no, I think a thought or I feel something and I have to analyze it and deeply understand it and get to the root core of it.
Oh, interesting.
So why I feel isolated a lot is because I view the world in a specific lens. And I wish more people could see it through my lens of all avenues. And I know that's unattainable. So I do feel isolated a lot. I feel people don't understand me. And where I've channeled that is, to me now, it's, we should all take immense pride in who we are, because we are all one of one. There's nobody who can understand any one of us. Doesn't matter if you have the same experience or the same event happen to you, you have different experiences from those events. And so being proud of who you are, being proud of being a one of one, it's, you don't seek to be understood, you know, seek to be misunderstood, because then that's showing that you're channeling in the right direction that not everybody can relate to. If people can't relate to you, now there's a caveat to this, but if your intentions and your direction is good in life and you want to achieve whatever you want to call success in your own life, whether that's spiritually, whether that's professionally, whether that's relationship, whether it's athletically, if people can't understand what you're striving for or the way in which you view the world in a positive light, then that's a good thing. It's a good signal. Mm-hmm. And I've begun to kind of take that mantra of like, I have really close friends. I have, you know, beautiful wife, beautiful daughters, a wonderful family. Like, even sometimes they can't understand me, and that's okay. They don't need to understand me. They just need to know and understand and respect that everything I do is for a reason and on purpose.
Yeah, I like the intellectual piece, and again, the explanation around it, because again, I feel as though that I'm the opposite of you, not from an intellectual, like I'm a very big, deep feeler. So like where you feel, and it's one of those, it's like, okay, and the why and trying to understand, like, I find myself that like I feel, and it sits and it lingers with me, and it can, and again, kind of like what you're saying, like it's a blessing and a curse, right? Because again,
things are a blessing and a curse.
Oh my gosh. That. Right. Like, and again, I know sometimes it drives my wife absolutely crazy, 'cause like, she's like, she'll say something and it's like, okay, hey, I'm moving past it. I'm sitting there going, and I'm processing and like feeling and all of this stuff. So like, I feel like you and I kind of we're on parallel paths, to use our friend Sam's, you know, kind of thing, but parallel paths, but very also yin and yang, like kind of a little bit opposite in many ways, which is kind of cool. And I think that's why I always enjoy our conversations too, because right. I feel as though I learn a lot from you, you know, despite our age difference and all of that stuff. Even like you were talking that one-on-one, I listened to the podcast with you and Sam. And that was kind of her quote. Now I'm going to butcher it.
The quote, the humble enough one.
Yeah.
It's like, humble enough to know I'm replaceable, And then I forget the latter part, but it's like to know I'm one of one.
Yeah, not like proud, not a prideful thing, but like confident enough to like something like
Absolutely.
that. But like,
Yep.
and that's it, right? Like, and I think that just kind of mirror moment for myself, right? Like trying to sit and understand. You mentioned the isolation. Like, I feel as though that I am in that space. You know, we've been in Arizona 2 years now, and don't have strong community, don't have people that are like tied to, and so trying to figure out all of those things while trying to figure out where you're going is freaking daunting. And again,
Stuff,
like it's really tough. And that's so, and it's not lost on just me either, right? You say you're going through it. We know that like athletes are going through it. Like this is a lot of the stuff that you're trying to kind of help bring to light through athletic fortitude, right? Like to help people with this. Like what somebody comes to you and you know shares kind of what I just did, right? Like I'm feeling isolated just despite being around people. I don't know where I'm going. This and this. Like, where do you guide them? What do you do?
Yeah, so I think a couple of different dimensions. First and foremost, I think it all comes back to identity, right? And identifying things that we can control or influence. And so what I can always control are my responses and my actions, right? So if I want to kind of, go through with what you're going through, it's, well, hey, what, creating myself to be the hero of my own story. If I'm viewing someone as a hero and this is looking outward to people that you admire, you think like, wow, they really do a great job, or there's things about them I absolutely love. Find the elements or characteristics of that you deeply admire, that deeply resonate with you, and begin to incorporate them into your own actions in life. Right. So for example, I think an easy one for me to give is like my grandfather worked until the day he died. Just had deep passion for working with gears, like machines and gears. He's a mechanical engineer. Had his own spot. I'm actually wearing his hat right now. But the thing I appreciated most is he was both simultaneously the toughest and most loving person in any room he was ever in. He's the first person I would pick in my foxhole. He's also the first person I would take, like, talk to if I needed to, like, a hug or a pick me up. So how do I then incorporate that into my own life? Or how, if I'm, going through those deep feelings or deep emotions that you're going through, the person I admire most, or the characteristics of the person I admire most, how would they handle this? Right? And baking that into yourself and through your own way and channeling it yourself. And then it goes back to that control and influence piece. And, there's this theory that I've been reading a lot on. I actually don't agree with a lot of it, but there are certain things I do agree with. And it's chaos theory. And high level of chaos theory. It's you can, can you don't have free will, you can't control anything, but you influence everything. Us sitting here having this exact conversation, the amount of randomness that took place for us to meet and come here, we're completely out of our control. But where I kind of tweak it and change it is, but we did control an element to get here. We made choices intentionally that brought us to this conversation. So it's, hey, well, what choices can I consciously make and control? And then what can I dictate actions to create influence and ripples throughout the rest of the world that I may never even see? And then it can kind of control and dictate your perception of what you're feeling. It can give you action steps to, hey, how can I move on from these feelings in a positive manner? How can I channel the energy from these emotions into something new?
I think that that's, and again, I think if you can tie it back to, it's chaos theory. Again, you can talk faith, right? Like, if you're spiritual, right? Like we said, many people believe that, again, either things are written or everything happens for a reason. But to the point, we still have free will, right? That
Yes.
we always have choice within it, and that ends up influencing kind of where things go. And it's really interesting to think. And again, given my situation and my reflective moments over the past, call it 2 years, right? Like I continue to lean more into understanding that and knowing that, like, again, everything that we've gone through back is part of the journey, right? It's
Yep.
brought us to here. I can't change it. Now, what am I going to do with it? And I think that what's interesting, because I sent a little bit of a kind of a prep and I asked questions. And one of the things that you shared in kind of the prep that you wanted to cover that I think is absolutely brilliant and it ties to all of this is the only way out is through. You are your only hope.
Yep.
And I've experienced this just through small conversations that you and I have had even prior to podcasts and all that stuff. But like, I'd love to understand how you landed on that, and then how you choose to live that, and then also bring that to other people.
Yeah. And again, I think you'll notice a theme. A lot of it ties back to identity, right?
100%.
Identity, like our actions determine our identity, and identity influences action and behavior. So the more I can bake something into who I am, the more likely I am to do it, right? Making it a lifestyle, right? Mm-hmm. Diet. I'm someone who eats healthy. That's an identity. So we're talking about, you know, the only way out is through. You are your only hope. No one's coming to save you. I came across that probably January, February-ish maybe. Listening to, you know, psychologists talk about how to kind of just like overcome something. And I think any time that we're faced with an obstacle, it's so natural to either want to work around it, try and get over it, try and backpedal. But the reality is you're avoiding the root cause of the problem. The root cause you have to work through. You cannot avoid it, or it's just going to grow and get bigger and feel more insurmountable. So the only way out is through is you got to find a way, whatever your brick wall is, whatever's holding you back, whatever's festering inside of you, you have to be able to work through that. Looks different for everybody. And then the latter part of that is nobody's coming to save you, right? And if you're waiting for someone to come save you, you're going to be waiting a really long time. And even if someone does come, you're still probably not going to feel fully fulfilled. So you are your only hope. And that's all you need. All you need is you. Now, I come from a very strong faith, you know, and to be honest, I try not to talk about it as much with this because I know not everybody's faithful.
Sure.
You know, and I'm a devout Catholic, so my views are a little bit different. And that plays into my isolation too. But it's, so what can I actually practically take? Right. And it's, I'm all I need. I have everything at my disposal I could ever need. But if you're faithful, you choose to be faithful. Mm-hmm. If you want to be resilient, here's your opportunity to show you're resilient. Right. And putting everything on you, because that's all you need. And building that conviction and faith in yourself that you can pull yourself out of through any situation that comes into your path. But the most important part is knowing what that wall is and stop trying to dance around it and just try and run right through it.
Yeah, man. Like, I think that's, and a lot of that has kind of been uncovered over the past several years. And I reference going kind of back to COVID and like people talking like mental health, right? Like mental health is a topic of conversation that is more readily available and supported, right? But again, I go back to like, hey, what's your wall and how are you getting through it? Well, for some people, it may be therapy. For some people, it could be something else. But like, I think it's understanding that the latter part of that sentence, of the statement, right? You are your only hope is an interesting one for me as I reflect, but it's also kind of something that we bring to life with, like as we're talking to our kids, right? So our kids are 7.5 and 5, right? They're in school, you're second grade and kindergarten. And we've always said this, and when things go wonky, when things are out of control, like the question is, or even when they're fighting with each other, hey, who do you have control over? What do you have control over? And the only thing you have control over is yourself, right? You said it again, the two things you said, actions and I'm drawing a blank on it. But like, again, those are the only things that we have control over in this world. It's ourself, right? Like, so from that perspective, I can't influence what Colin's going to do. I can't influence, I can try to, but ultimately it's up to you to make the decision, for my daughter to make the decision. And I think that that's a fascinating piece because I think it can create this, like, I don't want it to be like this superhero type thing, right? Like that, like it's me against the world, but ultimately in many cases it is. I guess, how do you, when you're talking to Robert Morris, I don't know what you talk to them about, but like if you're talking about a topic like this to a group of football athletes, whoever, like how do you get them to not go into superhero mode and realize they're part of a team and like not take it to the, kind of the extreme side of things? Because I could see it going that way too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I'm actually, you know, to be honest with you, I think being your own superhero is really healthy. And so when you communicate it in a team setting, right, be the hero of your role, okay? Mm-hmm. Every role, particularly in football, football is the biggest number of individuals on a singular team. There's 11 people on the field at one time all trying to achieve one thing, which is ultimately win. Like that's mm-hmm. what you want to do. Obviously, ego plays into that.
Yeah.
And I think that what's tough there is, and now we're going to really break it down, but like the coach has to put people in the right positions to win. So think about it this way. If I'm an athlete, I'm going to say I'm an athlete at Robert Morris. My sole goal is to put up as much numbers as possible and transfer to Pitt. A coach can actually use that. Because if that's how that person's driven and motivated, great. They're going to put in the effort and they're going to try and win. Now, for that athlete, they just have to make sure that they're not being a culture cancer and dragging everybody down if they don't get the ball. But if they're a receiver and they're immensely talented and I know they're working hard, the coach has to use that to their advantage, right? But so the other part of it, right, is developing those intrinsic value pieces. And so if you're creating yourself to be the hero, right, you have a choice. If you're not in a position you want to be, you can either sulk and be upset about it and do nothing and remain in that place, or you can take the chance, work incredibly hard, put your head down, do the right things everywhere, and see what you can actually achieve for yourself. And guess what? It's still not guaranteed you're going to have success, but I can guarantee you you're going to learn something about yourself that you can take into the future world. Whereas it's the person who is in a situation they don't like, they choose to do nothing and to, piss around and to, go out drinking during the week and not practice hard and not hit the weight room and not study film. They're not learning about themselves other than that they quit when things get hard. And so when you're talking about this, being a hero doesn't necessarily always mean being Captain America or Batman or Superman. Being a hero sometimes can be that role player, or being a hero for yourself is just, man, I really just proved to myself that I can handle adversity and come out on the other side. Maybe not get what I want, but get something a little bit better than what I was expecting before.
It's almost like if I'm gonna put a tag on it, right? Like it's being the hero of your story, not the hero of the story. And you could
Well said.
ultimately be that. So like, and again, coming from the coaching background, volleyball, that kind of stuff. And I loved where you went with that because like it's an interesting thing. And one thing that if we can kind of, I don't know if it's a detour, but like you talked about the coach being able to use you reference like the player and they want to go to Robert Morris, they want to transfer to Pitt and they can utilize that. I'll take it a step further and it ties into again life and all of these things. You got to be in relationship with these people, like particularly in positions of leadership or people that you're close to in order to do that. Because you need to know that, right? And then you need to be able to have conversations about that. And that's, you can tell I'm this is something I get passionate about, right? Community and relationship and almost every podcast I talk about, Dr. Brené Brown's definition of connection is making people feel seen, heard, and valued, right? The more that you have the ability to do that, then an organization can grow and thrive, particularly from a coaching perspective. And I guess I'd be curious to see, since I'm on this, right? Like, what are your thoughts on that and relationship from a leadership perspective? Because again, here you are, you're mentoring, you're creating, and I do want to make sure that we give time to kind of talk so you can talk about athletic fortitude, what it's all about, and what you're trying to accomplish. But like you're in this role and function, you're at the front of the room, and I'm just referencing Robert Morris because that was your most recent post, but like you're there. How do you create that connection with those athletes, right? Make them feel seen, heard, and valued? Or is that not necessarily something that's important to you?
Yeah, so I'm going to answer this in two ways. As like a
Go.
coach or a leader of an organization, I don't think you can have a success without having relationships with your players. Now, you're not going to be
Agreed.
able to have relationships with everybody because not everybody's going to want one. But like you said, everyone wants to feel seen and heard and valued. You want to be somewhere where I heard a guest on my show say you want to be somewhere where you're celebrated, not tolerated.
Yeah,
And so
big.
whether it's the best player on the team or worst player on the team, you should treat them with the exact same respect and enthusiasm, right? And that's a firm belief of mine. Obviously, naturally, you're going to gravitate towards players if you're a coach or a leader, towards people who do things right, and that's okay. But to at least make the effort and put in the wherewithal to get players to trust you is going to foster a culture of trust and performance. It's the old adage, nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. And that, like, these things are cliche, but they're true. Like, the more you know someone cares about you, the harder you're going to play, the more you're going to listen to them, the more you're going to buy in. And so it's a little bit different when you're, when I'm speaking, right? So like a public speaking event, it's what can I pull from my own story that's going to hit and resonate exactly what these kids are going through right now. And so for me, to be honest, I probably sat, and again, this goes back to just because I've been in the same position doesn't mean I'm going to understand what you're going through, but it's the reality is I probably sat in every single situation most of those kids are going to go through. I've been the star player. I've been almost benched. You know, I've been cut. You know, I've been a kid, you know, just fighting for special teams reps. You know, I've been in every scenario you could almost be in as a football player. I've been injured.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, here's what I went through. And here's how I turned it into a company. And here's the principles and foundation of what we do to get to where we want to be.
Yeah.
And to kind of foster that, just completely open. Like for me, that's like the easiest way is, you know, and I don't call it vulnerability. I don't call it weakness. It's like, hey, this is pure truth. You know, I got cut and I went into a bad place, but I pulled myself out of it. I created this company. Here are the two founding pillars of what we do. We engineer our identity and we engineer what we want to achieve and what we're willing to commit to. So, and then we mirror those two or marry those two. And it, you know, some people probably didn't hit at all. I can't control that, but I know it hit with a lot of people because they reached out to me afterwards, including the coach.
See, and again, I think that, and I love that. I'm reading a book right now called Building a Story Brand, right? And I think that everything that we do, social media, conversation, like it's all story, it's all narrative based. And again, it goes back, like the reason I love the format of podcasts and why I've brought this back and I'm trying to like, man, everyone's got a story and everybody's got a story worth sharing. And if it can help one person, right? If somebody, to your point, if somebody can feel like they've been in that seat or something that Colin said, like it lands with them, like that's what it's about. And I think that that's the coolest part. And I love the fact that you're utilizing this company and your opportunities to connect from that level to then further impact lives.
I appreciate that. It's, you know, it means a lot to me because I don't want people to have to go through what I went through. And I don't think in particular the transition out of athletics or dealing with identity is talked about enough. It's starting to be talked about more, a lot more, but it's the one thing I have found in my own journey that's at the root either cause of any problems or the root solution for anything is identity. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's been a crazy ride, but it's something I'm deeply passionate about.
No, I dig it, man. And I think that that's like, I know identity is obviously one of your pillars, right? Resilience, fortitude, and we keep coming back around those things. What you just said really lands with me from the fact that like people don't talk about what it's like when it's over. And and I'll take it a step further. It's the same for coaches, right? Coaches are a little bit different because I think, and this is the lens from my experience, right? I was never a high level athlete. I played men's college club volleyball at the University of Toledo and I was terrible, right? Like I was athletic, but like I got brought in because I could jump. I was goofy footed, which means I took my approach differently. Like I did it backwards, but like the interesting thing about all this, right? Everybody's kind of got this path in life that we go down. And then when a door closes, particularly something that is foundational for identity, right? Like athlete, coach, yeah, you can even talk like CEO, like vice president, mother, like anytime an identity, there's an identity shift. I think that if people don't reflect and then don't have the understanding of where they're trying to go beyond that, that's when all of this stuff continues to happen, right? Like COVID, right? All of these different things brought things up. But like, I love that that's kind of your foundational piece. Is that, you essentially created Athletic Fortitude based off of your experience to be able to help. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's perfectly said.
And I think, I guess here's my question, right? Because you create this because there's this need because of what you've gone through, but how do you, it goes, I'm going to fumble over this because I'm trying to figure out how I want to articulate this. Because again, like I'll look at your hat, right? Okay. That's kind of backwards hat and everything. Like you're essentially changing hats as you create this business. But like, how do you know in the moment that it's time to put that different hat on, and that it's like, okay, this is done, right? It's written, and then here I go.
I think that's something everybody's trying to figure out. If I told you I 100% knew, I'd be lying to you. And I think if anyone says they 100% know, I think they're lying as well. Some of those things you kind of figure out along the way, I do think it is an energy feel. It is a gut feel. It's like, you know, I know that my time here is done. I'm satisfied. I'm happy. You know, and maybe it's one of those things it's told and it's the reality. But I think more or less you're going to know. You're going to feel it, you know, deep into your gut. And then what's next is I'm big on following. I call it a gravitational pull. Like, where is this pulling me? And to be in full tune with yourself. And that's why, like, again, understanding who you are and having that self-awareness to feel where you're being pulled and to, you know, feel where you don't want to be. And sometimes that's even more powerful, is to know, hey, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
Then you can eliminate it, get that out of here. And then it's just continuing to search and look for something else. That's how I look at it.
Can you pinpoint the moment for you when it was like, when Athletic Fortitude was birthed, when it was like, when you had that energy pull?
Yeah. So the pull became when I started to actually educate myself on what I was going through. And I deeply fell in love with that process. Right. So I went from star athlete to a nobody in the snap of the fingers. And so I had to then educate myself after a period of, you know, being in a bad spot. Why was I feeling this way? And then to go back, why did I love football for the non-ego pieces? Because I think ego obviously plays a role. You love, you know, the recognition, the admiration, the feeling like roles are different for you. Like every athlete, if they don't tell you that they are like those things, they're lying. But I had to find deeper. Why did I actually love football? So I came to the knowledge that I love a mental, physical, and emotional challenge.
Okay.
So once I understood that, I'm kind of then able to transition it and find it to where I want to pinpoint it. And so it started in a couple of different lenses. I had a business partner who was a good friend of mine. We started a podcast together called Identity Impact. I got to a point where I was ready to go all in with it. He had a training business. So he was kind of hedging. There were certain directions I wanted to take. And so ultimately we're still friends to this day. We just decided to separate, and I turned it into this engineering identity platform. And that's what I became so drawn to, because I saw how much, as I began to learn and as I continued to learn more, how much that is at the root of everything, being able to pinpoint who you are and how you react to certain situations.
And that's, I want to touch on the, I'm not going to call it a failure, but the pivot, right? Like, I think that's really important as everybody kind of sits and tries to figure out, right? Is the pivots or the failures, again, Sam uses the term, and it's done a lot in entrepreneur side of things, right? Like, fail fast, right? And continue to fail forward. But like, you very easily could have been like, okay, no, this isn't it, right? Like, this is, and what caused you, like, was there something that caused you, like, no, this is it, I'm rolling? Like,
yeah. So I think for me, like, particularly when it comes to like podcasting, I think is a really easy way to put it. And I've stated before, I feel like I was born to podcast. And then part of it is I feel like I'm born to coach in ways too, is because, as I articulated earlier, it's that identity shift for me. This is, anytime I'm podcasting or having those conversations, it's now I get to unlock the deep curiosity part of myself. The part where, you know, if I'm sitting at a family dinner, right, I can't really have the conversations I want to have because the wavelengths are different. But so now I'm in this podcast platform, and I'm like, this person, realistically, I mean, they don't have any choice but to answer my questions.
Yeah.
Naturally, they have something I'm interested in learning about. Thirdly, I feel like they're smarter than me, which is wonderful, because I want to upskill my life. I want to learn more. And then four, it's like, to me, it's a judgment-free zone. Like, hey, I'm completely opening this out here in my own life. I'm going to talk about this as if nobody's listening, right? And it's that opportunity for me to kind of be free. So that's why I love, like, the podcast and how I got drawn to that. And, you know, then like the coaching side is I love helping others, right? Like, I mean, at the end of the day, like obviously you have to get paid to make a living, to take care of myself. And there's a lot of good money in this space. So that's a motivating factor too, but to have actual impact in my work and to see an athlete take it and use it and it be beneficial to them. Yep. It's awesome. You know, it really is.
Those are those moments that not the moments of validation, but the moment, like it's the, I mean, I guess maybe moments of validation, it's the pat on the back and it's the reminder to keep going, right? Like that, okay, it's the energy. You were talking about the energy flow, right? Like it keeps you on that energy wavelength. And I'm in a similar boat with you from a podcasting perspective. And I know, you know, you mentioned that you feel like you're born to do this. And again, from what I've heard and listened, I absolutely agree with it. I think that you are a fantastic podcast host, and I think that you navigate conversation very well, and you pull out some amazing things out of individuals. And I think that, like we kind of talked before, I think that the one thing I love about podcasts is that everybody's different, right? Everybody's got a different strategy, a different vibe, all of these different things. I don't know, like, I guess I'm going to ask a question and then we can kind of come back around to it. But like, what podcast do you listen to? Like, what are some of your favorites?
I'm going to be honest, my favorite podcast in the world is Modern Wisdom with Chris Williamson. His stuff is so good. I am infatuated with the way he conducts his interviews, his conversations that he has. His podcast, number one, I'm always on. I do listen to Rogan. He's got his own unique style, but Rogan, I'm actually more interested in the guests that he brings on than actually listening to Rogan. That's not a knock to him.
Yeah, no,
He's obviously amazing at what he does. But like certain guests, I listen to.
Yeah.
I also, Ed Milet show, I listened for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. Trying to think who else is on my cycle. I used to listen to Huberman a lot. Mm-hmm.
That guy's brilliant in his own right. Like,
absolutely. And then My First Million, if you're looking for like business ideas, My First Million, they are awesome. They con themselves the Barstool of entrepreneurship. They are really, really good, and they're funny, and they're conversational, and you learn so much about business from their show. So I love those guys for a different flavor. That's kind of my Rolodex.
Yeah, and again, I'm a big fan. I love Armchair Expert with Dax Shepard and Monica Padman. I like how they interview, and I also, what I find interesting, I enjoy their conversation with the two of them. With a guest, and they do everything. I think most everything live in Dax's like apartment garage or something like that. But like, I listen to a lot of that. I like Rogan. I don't listen to enough of him because it's interesting. He's a host that just, I mean, he embraces who he is.
He's fully authentic.
100%. And I think that like, I wrote down a couple of the other ones that you mentioned, cause I'd like to start listening to those because again, that's the cool thing. Everybody's got their own vibe and style. And then even my first podcast I ever listened to was the Tim Ferriss Show. Loved that was kind of got me down the path, right? Like an interview based Tim Ferriss. I like some Rich Roll. Some of the ones through NPR are great, but like I haven't done a whole heck of a lot of listening in it, but I've just recently started because I'm trying to kind of fine tune my craft from the questions perspective, the connection perspective, and just hear how different people, you know, steer things. So I appreciate kind of those recommendations for sure.
Absolutely. I highly recommend Modern Wisdom. That one.
Okay.
That one hits.
Yeah, I mean, you literally lit up when you talked about that. So yeah,
he's a bucket list guy that I want to meet at some point because his content's awesome. Really, really good stuff.
Maybe a bucket list for an interview. Come on, man. Let's set it out there. If we don't throw it out there, it can't happen.
No, you're right. That's we'll will it to existence.
Let's go. We've been going probably just a little over an hour, and I want to be cognizant of your time, right? And then also our listeners. But like, I guess where I'd want to wrap before I go to full closing is like, what do you want to share around athletic fortitude? Kind of what you're up to, what you're looking for, how people can connect with you and all of those kind of things.
Yeah. So athletic fortitude in general, so like I said, we work with athletes, we engineer the identity that they want. We help them find out what actual goals they want based off of what they're willing to commit to. right? And I think that that's a big discontent in athletics is we think we want X, but we're only willing to pay Y. And so when it gets to that point where it's we're not achieving X because we're only, willing to pay Y without the actual recognition of the difference in those two, we chalk everything up here up to luck or things that feel like they were out of our control when in reality, we just weren't working to the level that we needed to. So I help find that equilibrium between what you want to achieve, what you're willing to commit to, and most importantly, working through that with the lens of engineering our identity. So we work with athletes, professional, Olympic, college, high school. We work with all them. Then I have my content creation side, which I really enjoy, the podcast, the newsletter. Just started writing on Twitter. And that stuff I just love because, like I said, it's an opportunity for me to kind of pull out that curiosity side of me, that unfiltered side where I can kind of go in and be myself and resonate with people. But if you can check us out at athleticfortitude.com, that's where all our stuff is. But yeah, check out the Athletic Fortitude show. It's on all platforms, YouTube as well. It's something that's been pretty awesome for me and led me to great people like you, Steve, and really, really hard to actually believe kind of how far it's come in the last 20 months or so.
It's rad to kind of zoom out and go look at even just you mentioned the last 20 months, right? That journey and just hearing you articulate it, through our conversation. And you and I don't know each other very well. It's just not necessarily surface, but a little bit beyond that. But like your 20 month journey has been phenomenal. The steps that have gotten you to this point, like it's unreal. And I think that that's a proof point to me to anybody that's literally sitting and trying to understand, okay, well, what is Colin do? Hey, this is like he's literally done it himself. And that's the what he wants to bring to life for others to be able to help support this journey. And I love that you are living it and you're not just somebody out there like just kind of talking the talk, if that makes
Sure.
sense.
Nah, and that's one thing I frequently say to any athlete I work with is I would never ask you to do something I wasn't willing to do myself or understand myself. And if it is something I've never practiced, the first thing I'm going to say is, hey, I don't do this, but I learned this from here. It may work for you. It doesn't work for me type of conversation. But yeah, it's forced me to constantly challenge myself, challenge my insecurities, challenge my fears, implement daily routines. So that way I can be like, hey, I know this works because I did it. And, hopefully it resonates with the people I work with as well.
Matt, before we kick, I kind of wrap us and offer some gratitude to you. Like you mentioned daily routines, and I'd be remiss if I didn't ask what's kind of on your to-dos or your daily routines that are non-negotiable.
Yeah, so daily routine, living gratitude. Number one, first and foremost, got to be grateful for where you are, for the things that you have. It makes everything else, the
How do you
icing
do
on
that?
top. Yeah, so to be honest, it started out with journaling. I'd write down 10 things I'm grateful for every single day. Now it's at the point where I actively try and seek it out and visualize. Like, so if I'm like beautiful sunny day, I can't tell you how much I love having a beautiful sunny day here in Pittsburgh, considering we never have them. Having a conversation like this, extremely grateful. I just had surgery yesterday. I'm already off crutches, being grateful just to walk. Yes, I'm in pain, but hey, I'm walking. Whereas, my surgery, what was that, 8 months ago now, I couldn't walk for 6 weeks. So just being able to find the little things that you're grateful for, I always encourage to start off writing because then you get to bake it into your mind. Once you do that enough, then you begin to kind of seek it out and you can talk through it. Other routine, I work out every day. Some type of workout. I'm doing something. It makes me feel good, so I do it. I think it's an important part. I don't know if it fits everybody's routine, but I have supplements, creatine, electrolytes, vitamin D, magnesium, fish oils every morning. Part of my routine that I love, when my daughter first wakes up, we put on a movie for like a half hour, allow her to kind of wake up, and then we kind of go on with our day. Big into breathing. It's not a part of my everyday routine, but anytime I feel what I say is like suffocation, feel like you got too much going on, head clutter, just sit there breathing through the belly and just exhale it for however long you need. When I was playing and competing, big on visualization. So like when I give public speeches now, I visualize, incorporate that. I don't do it every day, but I know if I'm preparing for a speech, probably about for a week straight, I'm going to visualize executing that perfectly. Those are probably the main ones. I used to cold shower, but one of my guests I had on my podcast, I'm actually doing a, he's great, by the way, No Limit Physiques. I'm going to shout him out on here. He's put me through a diet plan and he told me no cold showers through this diet plan. So I said, okay, I'll take your word for it. So I haven't cold showered in a while, but that was a, foolproof part of my routine. Yeah. But yeah, that's pretty much it. I'm going to get back into the routine of reading before bed. The Pittsburgh Pirates were giving me hope they were going to make the playoffs. So I started to watch them a little bit more, but they stink again. So I can get back to reading.
I mean, I'm from Cleveland originally. So again, like I know about stinking and then also having those, those ups and downs. So, and the fact that we went over an hour, you being from Pittsburgh, me being from Cleveland, we had a civil conversation. It's amazing. Come on now.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm not a Steelers fan anymore. I'm a diehard Bills guy. So
that's fair.
We can tag team on the Steelers this year.
I mean, heck, I don't know if I can. I'm not even gonna get into it. But like, before we go, you mentioned the cold, cold water therapy is something I love. Being in Arizona, I can't take. They don't have such things as cold showers during the summer because when it's 115 out, the water is literally not cold. But I went out to Marosco Forge. Shout out them. Went out to their headquarters about 2.5 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. And they're one of the premier ice bath companies here or across the country. And they actually have units that create ice. And I saw the operation and I got to meet the CEO and I actually got to plunge in one of their units.
That's awesome.
Where ice is floating on the top. It was 35 degrees. It was the cool, no pun intended. It was the coolest thing ever. I love cold water therapy and I want to kind of find more anchors to be foundational for those morning routines and daily routines. We'll talk supplements and stuff like that offline because that's something that I think that is important too, and we can talk about all that and I just catching up. But let me wrap us so, man. I know that you and I don't know each. We just met each other over the past couple months, but I'm grateful for the time that we've spent, man, and the time that we've connected and continue to learn about each other. And I just really want to recognize you for what you're doing and what you're bringing to life and how you show up daily, because I know that you have conviction in yourself and you continue to do it and you're impacting lives. But man, I just want you to know that how you show up, it matters and it's super important. I think it's really, really cool. And I'm grateful that we are really connected and I can't wait to see what the future holds for you, for me. And let's just kind of see where things go. But man, I'm honored that you chose to spend time with me day after surgery, and we'll make sure that we kind of pump this all out and I'll make sure that we tag in everything. But man, Colin, thank you. I'm grateful.
I appreciate you, Steve. And it's been a pleasure the last couple months getting to know you too. Excited to see where our paths continue. Getting to do some stuff together. So can't thank you enough for having me on to share my story. It was a nice break in the, laying down with my leg elevated. So, I appreciate the conversation and, I'm excited to see you bring back steps and, see where this goes as well.
I appreciate it, man. We'll link everything in show notes and do all that stuff and make sure everybody knows how to follow you, man. So until we talk again, we'll catch you soon.
I appreciate you, brother. See ya.
All right.